Okay, so what I'll continue the discussion, or kind of as Joe and Simeon had talked about earlier. So first I'll just talk a little bit about traditional wisdom, or I mean deep brains, and or just review very shortly what you hopefully know, deep brains and Ramon field. Just the traditional wisdom, which has nothing to do with case theory. So no case theory first. And then how these things get augmented to case theory. So first, as we saw the two previous times, deep brain charges are now related to case theory. So what's new in this talk compared to the earlier is that these so-called Ramon fields will now also be related to case theory, which is not so unnatural, since deep brains and Ramon fields, they come together usually. So if one of them should have a changed interpretation in terms of case theory, the other one should probably also. And then I'll explain the relation between case theory and standard Ramon fields. And then give some examples of some predictions or some conclusions from this. Okay, so ordinary. So remember, there are many string theories, but two that we will be interested in today is one called type 2A and another one called type 2B. They are the maximally supersymmetric string theories. They live in 10 dimensions. They live in 10-dimensional spaces. So just think of 10-dimensional series with gravity and other kind of forces, everything interacting in a 10-dimensional space. And there are lots of objects and fields in these series. So, for instance, they both have a metric and so on. But today we will only be interested in a subset of fields called Ramon fields. So for the type 2A series, we have a set of p-forms. This is the so-called potential, the Ramon potential. And here P is odd here. So 1, 3, and 5. And yeah, we could continue to 9. We could discuss maybe even if we should have minus 1. Let's see, but whatever. And then the associated field strength, dP plus 1, which is locally just d of c. So this is just locally. Globally, it's... So for the case of p equal to 1, this is really like a one form, but we should really more think of it like a connection. So in other words, we should patch it together on the manifold with transition functions. So locally at least we have these defined. And then we have the field strengths, which should be globally defined. So this works locally, but GP is then globally defined, but given by DCP only locally. Okay, so these have then, so in other words, the field strengths, they come with even ranks. So there is a 0 form and a 2 form and so on, up to a 10 form in type 2A. And then also in type 2A, we know we have the D brains, the DP brains. And here P is like 0, 2, so the even numbers, up to 8. And remember that a p-brain, the terminology is such that a p-brain has a brain is like, just think about it like, I mean, so for instance, a zero brain, a d0 brain is a particle. And for instance, that now there is no p equal to 1 here, but a d1 brain would be like a string. So think about this as the dimension of the object, the space dimension of it. Then there is also time. So the world volume of a DP brain is actually P plus 1 dimensional. But if we forget about time, it's just that the world volume of a P brain is P dimensional. Okay. And then in type 2B, there's a very similar story. Just everything basically is the same, just that you exchange, for all the P's here, you exchange odd and even. So for instance, type 2B doesn't have a D0 brain, it has a D1 brain and a D3 brain and so on. Okay.
So C, P are not ordinary differential forms?
I mean, locally they are, but they are only defined up to a gauge symmetry. So it's only D of it which should be... DCP, which is a P plus 1 form, is a real differential form. These are differential forms the way I write it here, but they're defined up to a gauge symmetry. But you could say you identify them, would identify if they are D of something lower. So in that sense, more like a connection. Yeah. Okay. Now, so usually in string theory, of course, nobody knows exactly how to define the full string theory. And here even I'm only describing a subset of it. But at low energies, low energy meaning where everything varies smoothly. So, for instance, if all the fields here don't vary too fast, there are scales in string theory, like string scales and so on. So that we use different descriptions of the physics depending on how fast the fields vary. So in other words, nobody really knows how to describe like a Ramon-Ramond field that would like go up and down crazily within very, very tiny distances. So, but when everything varies slowly, we have more control over the situation. And what we usually do there is to describe physics in terms of a low energy effective action, making more contact to ordinary field theory. So for instance, we use actions and so on. So we think of them as fields and write down an action. So the action is a long expression involving the metric and all kind of other fields. But I'll just concentrate on exactly what we need here. So the action for the Ramon-Ramond fields is just a simple one. You integrate over the manifold where they're defined, just the square of the field strength. It's the field strength which enters in the action, not the potential. Okay. So this is a standard kinetic term, we would say, for the Ramon-Ramond fields. And then there is also... Okay, of course, lots of other terms, which is not relevant here. And then, also, if there happens to be a D-brain, suppose that we are in our space, and there is a D-brain around, let's say it's sitting here, then that D-brain would couple to the Ramon-Ramond field. So there is a typical coupling, so which is basically just given by integrating the P-form over the world volume of, or I guess this is P plus 1. Now I'm just concentrating on one P. Of course, then there is a sum. There's a sum over P in all of this. I mean, right?
There's why a dP as?
Sorry?
dK. Oh, is this dK?
Yeah. This is the integration over the full manifold.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So then the usual coupling between the D-brain and the Ramon-Ramond potential, the D-brain couples to the potential. It is to integrate the potential over the world volume of the brain. So in this case, if this is a P-form, then this would actually be a P-1 brain. Remember, there is a shift of 1 because we don't include time. That's a little confusing, but whatever. So it has some world volume, and then this is the coupling between them. Okay. As usual, when we have an action, of course, in the full theory, one should do quantum mechanics over everything in some sense. I mean, try to define position functions and so on. But we can also just, but classically, I mean, if we don't go to the quantum version, in a certain limit, we can just think of these fields as classical. Simply just that there is a Ramon-Ramond field, like an electric field. It takes some values. And then we know that the value they take should solve the equations of motions. And as usual, equations of motions come by solutions to equations of motions are fields that are at extrema of the action. So, like local minima, for instance. Right? Is that familiar? So if we just do everything at the classical level, then we really don't need the action. What we need is just the equation of motion. So we vary the action with respect to this potential CP, and we find the Euler-Lagrange equation for that, and that's the equation of motion. So, classically, then the equation we would get would be something like D star, where this is the Hodge dual of this P plus 1 form, just becomes delta of V, where delta of V is here. So delta of V is like a source, the source, actually, so delta V here is the Poincaré dual is the Poincaré dual to the world volume here spanned by this brain. So it's a 10 minus, in this case it's a 10 minus P form. So this you just get by varying this action. Actually, it doesn't matter if you don't like the action, then just take as faith that these Ramon-Ramon fields obey an equation of motion that relates them to the sources, which are the D brains, in this way. So in other words, it's just exactly like if you have electrons in the real world, and then they couple to the electric field. So if there is an electron, it will create an electric field around it. Exactly similar here. If there is a D brain, it will create Ramon-Ramon fields out in space around it. And the equation is given here. Okay. Also, this is what we would call electric coupling. So, D brains can couple both electrically and magnetically to the Ramon-Ramon fields. So this is the equivalent magnetic coupling. Actually, the difference between electric and magnetic is just to replace the field strength with its dual. Actually, what I forgot to say is here that in some sense you should not think of all these as independent. For instance, there is a two-form field strength G2. That will be constrained by some equation of motions to be the dual of the eight form. So the number of independent fields are not all of these. So for instance, in this case, it's very simple. You could for instance say that the independent ones would be G0, G2, and G4. And then the G6, G8, and G10 are determined in terms of those. It's a little subtle, but kind of that's what we would say. You could of course also choose some of the other ones as independent ones. Okay, but the magnetic coupling is basically just to replace the field strength with its dual. So the equivalent equation of motion would be dTP, let's say, or equal to delta of P. Yeah, okay, sorry. When I write P, it's more schematically around. It's not necessarily the same P all over. You would do this for all the P's in the corresponding series, right? Okay, so in this case, we still have... So here, in the way I write it here, now it's a P plus 1 form. And still Poincaré dual to W.
But what's the relation to
W? Sorry, this was just like... Suppose you accept this equation. Then, and suppose I get the P's right, then here I should probably write 10 minus P, right? So now it's the same. Yeah, so now it was the same dub. I mean, if you want this, you could either, suppose we keep W. Then you could say it's electrically coupled to this one, mm-hmm. and magnetically coupled to the dual field strength. So for instance, suppose, yeah?
First of all, do you mean D star? Oh, no, sorry.
Yeah, that...
I'm sorry. And also, could you explain G0? There's no minus 2 here.
Right, so G, yeah, okay. So for instance, that's right. So even what do I mean by G0? Even there is no potential for it. And G10, so G0 would, right, there is no minus 2 brain. So G0 should not have any source, and G0 should just be something like a constant. Yeah, I mean, it's a little subtle when you get to the end of, if G0 exists, it should just be something like a constant. Yeah, but then that's... Yeah, I mean, if we're on a connected manifold, then... So, yeah, I mean, it is, right, it's subtle when you get down to these where the potential does not really exist and there is no brain that couples to them.
Why is it important to consider them?
Yeah, okay, we can drop them. It's fine with me. Right. I mean, yeah, it's not important to... I mean, yeah, maybe... Okay, if it is, at least it's not important right now. There probably is something important to them, but it's not... they're not dynamical in the same way. And, I mean, I don't know what they're telling us. It's a good question. So, for instance, in this case with electric and magnetic, if we take the D0 brain and type 2A, then it would be electrically coupled. Since it has a one-dimensional world volume, it would be electrically coupled to the C1 or the G2. So it's electrically coupled, so electric to G2, or magnetic to the dual, which is then G8. So we have this freedom of either using magnetic or electric language and replacing fields by the duals. Okay, but let's just right now for convenience, let's stick to the magnetic version of it. So let's stick to this formula. Yeah, let me change it to P. Now it's another P, but just to make it easier. So in other words, we have equations like this. We have well-defined P forms over all of space-time that are based on this equation. This here we should think of as the charge. This is in some sense the brain charge. And this is how the fields measure how they couple to it. I mean, how you can, if you measure the field, you can find out what the brain charge is. So that's the first thing we'll make more precise. Okay. So firstly, we see delta of W is a closed form. So it defines, obviously, it defines an element in the P plus 1 chromology of the manifold. Right. But also, seen from this equation, we obviously see that it's actually zero. So delta is zero in cohomology. Because it's D of something which is well defined globally. Now, it's also. For brain wrapping a cycle, this is actually happening in the transverse directions. So, if you have a, suppose the brain, what I mean, suppose we have the brain here, that's W. Then the delta of W, the Poincaré dual, is actually more going to be something that looks like delta function, if you call the transverse directions X and call these Y. Then it's more to be something like this, delta X dx. So, yeah. So it's Gauss's law. Because this equation should have a solution.
It is exact.
Oh, okay. It's exact.
Yeah,
okay.
It's exact.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I see.
So, I mean, the point is that these G, they should exist. There's something inconsistent if the Romont field strengths are not well defined on the manifold.
I see.
So it's zero just like this, but. There is another group where it's also an element. It's also an element in the P plus 1 chromology of M with compact support. Com means compact here. So, we see the reason why it's also an element of the chromology with compact support because this delta of W actually has compact support. It's supported around where the brain is. I mean, you could just, if you want to, think about here's the brain, and then delta of W was just this delta of x times dx, I mean, or more dimensions, if depending on how many transverse dimensions there are. But of course, if you want to, we can spread it out. Or it could be many brains. It could be many brains next to each other. Then we would just sum over all the brains. Or we could maybe spread it out as, so instead of one charge at some point, a charge density, and spread out the delta function. But the point is just that if we localize all the brains somewhere in space, then the brain charge here has compact support. I mean, so it takes values in this group. Also, here it's non-zero. It can't be non-zero. Because this, and the reason here that it's not exact here is, of course, that GP, because GP could have, I mean, does not have not compactly supported. Okay. So this leads us to our first understanding of what brain charges are. We can say, so what is a brain chart? Remember, we're only talking about D brains now. These string series also have other kind of brains, which are not relevant for today. So brain chart just takes values in... So now we've seen that they take values in H... I mean, let me put a star now here, because the P was just some random P. It works for all P's, I mean, the even or the odd ones, depending on whether it's type 2A or type 2B. So it takes values here in the compact, but also... Okay, so also we have a map.
So your space-time happens to be compact,
yeah.
Then algorithm is trivial.
Yeah, that's true. So let me exactly. So in general there is a map from the compactly supported cohomology into the cohomology, just by forgetting that it's compactly supported. There's definitely such a map. Call it I. So in terms of differential forms, it's just the same differential form that goes over. But the point is, of course, that something could be non-zero here, but map to zero here. If it's exact with a differential form that does not go to zero at infinity. Right, okay. So what we've just seen is that brain charges... Sorry. So let me call this map I. So brain charges takes values in the kernel of I. Right. So this is one characterization of D brain charges. They are in the kernel of I, where I is this map from the manifold intercept. And you're right, then there is a special case where you can say, suppose the manifold is compact. Then, of course, we can erase this because there's nothing new in writing compact here. So then the kernel of this map is only zero. So we get as a corollary that when M is compact, then there is brain charge is zero. I mean, the only charge is zero. And that's actually also a result that physicists are familiar with. I mean, it is the same argument as here. But on a compact manifold, you cannot put charges. A physicist would usually say that the flux has nowhere to escape. Like, for instance, if you have an electrically charged particle, it will radiate flux out. But if it lives on a sphere, for instance, where should the flux will have to meet an anti-charge somewhere else. So it's just the result that on compact manifolds, brain charges is zero. But on non-compact manifolds, there are non-zero charges, and so it's obviously something with infinity. I mean, you can see it at infinity. So there is another description of the charge. So now we see that it must be something that the charge has something to do with infinity. And what we'll discuss now is actually that you can always measure the charge from infinity. So let's see how you do that. So this was one description of the brain charge. Now we'll find another description that will involve that the Ramond field knows about the charge through this equation. And so obviously, if you are given the Ramond field strength, you could also go back to the charge. So we can also characterize the charges using these field strengths. And also, it must be something that happens at infinity that's important.
What's the relation of this to Chan-Patton bundle?
There is no Chan-Patton bundle right now. The Chan-Patton bundle is on these. So you have these brains that are charges for the Ramond field. So when you have these brains, the Ramond fields radiate away. So here you have Ramond fields. Chan-Patton bundle is on the brains. You have Gates fields living. There is in itself a Gates bundle on the brain and a connection and so on. So the Chan-Patton bundle is the bundle living here.
There are formulas in the literature where the D-brain charge is computed in terms of chain character of the Chan-Patton bundle.
Yeah, that's true.
Then there must be a relation between this little charge and the Chan-Patton bundle at the outset.
Yeah, that's right. I'll get to that later. Okay. I think probably I'll get to it later. But so the way these Chan-Patton bundles would usually get into that, if you take a bigger brain, then you can create these brains inside the bigger brain using bundles. I guess that's exactly what Simeon and probably also Joe talked about. Okay, but let's get back to that. But right now there are no Chan-Patton bundles. Right now, I mean, in my talk right now there are no Chan-Patton bundles. But we can get back to it. Yeah.
The solution of G must be very singular.
Yeah. I mean, if you
in the differential form, you allow singular differential.
Yeah. Either you could just say, okay, the brain is not really supported at a point. You spread it out a little bit. So either you could spread it out and then everything would become smooth.
But
you can also just allow delta functions. Delta functions are not a problem.
By nothing, can you?
What?
Yeah,
you can make it non-singular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's only convenient notation.
Yeah.
You can use a non-singular form. And actually, for physicists, you wouldn't care because you can always say, okay, is it singular or non-singular at such a small scale that we should anyway not use this description. It's just a convenient way of... If you did the calculations with a delta function or a very smoothed out one, I mean, a small one but smoothed out, you should get the same results. The difference should only appear on this scale, which you could put below whatever we are doing anyway. As I told you in the beginning, this is only some kind of effective description to be trusted at longer distance. Yeah. But that's a good question, too. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so now we go to so suppose you have the space-time the manifold M, and also we have N, which is we think of like the boundary of M. So for instance in one case we could think of where we just think about it M as R10 for instance, then N would just be an S9 at infinity. Or if it's other manifolds, but like the boundary at infinity. So N is like the boundary. Okay, so then there is a long exact sequence. We know that, I'm sure. I don't know, maybe we've seen it earlier. I'm not sure. But in integral cohomology. That goes like this. And then continues. So here, of course, the map here is just, of course, that since N is a submanifold of M, or a subspace of N, we just restrict from M to N. And then here's the non-trivial part of the long exact sequence that goes from P form to P plus 1. Okay, I'll just quote this one. That's okay, right?
Yeah.
So, and now we see, and this thing here we could also, these are like P plus 1 forms at M, but which are zero at N. So this is actually just another notation of what I called the compact support before. I mean, if N is taken to be the boundary, like here in the case of the sphere. So this is just another way. I mean, it's the same as I wrote over there, when N is the boundary. Okay, so now we see... And also, we have the map that I called I over here. It's here, it's exactly that part of the sequence here. Okay. So now we remember, so what we talked about before was the brain charge, which was the kernel of this map I. And now we use the exact sequence to say that the kernel of this would be the image of this. So basically, so what maps into it is HPN, but of course what's killed in this map is what comes from over here. And if we call this map J, just the restriction map, then J of HPM. Okay, so here we have The another way of thinking about what brain charges is. It can be thought of as the cohomology at infinity. So basically you should think about this P form, the field strength at infinity. So if you know the field strength at infinity, you can read off what the charge is. So if you think about ordinary electromagnetism and Gauss law, it's just the fact that if you know the electric field at infinity, you can, for instance, integrate it on a sphere and you get what the charge is. So what this formula is saying is that you can also think of it as the field strengths at infinity, and then modulo, and then what this we are modeling out by here are field strengths that can be extended to the full manifold. So suppose, for instance, that this GP. So you see, at infinity, this one is zero. Right? So this equation is saying that GP is closed at infinity. So you should just think about the element here. You should say is exactly GP. It's a closed form at infinity. But it's not a closed form everywhere because D of it is non-zero where the source is present. But then this modding out is just saying that we should identify those that differ by something which is defined everywhere. So in other words, if there is not the source, it would be GP equal to zero, which would show that GP was well defined in all of H, was an element in HP of M. And in other, so in the case where the brain charge is zero, GP actually is in this space, and it's zero, so it's zero in this coset, and we get that when this one was zero, we get zero over here. So you see, so it would be wrong if we didn't divide out. So the moral here is that we can measure the brain charge at infinity by looking at the field strengths, but we have to mod out by field strengths that can be extended as closed differential forms everywhere. GP can always be extended to the whole manifold, but not as closed forms. If they can be extended as closed forms, the charge is zero. Okay? Okay, so now we are over with the traditional wisdom. This has nothing to do with K-theory, and people could have said this long before K-theory ended string theory. Okay? So now what we are going to do now is that, remember the brain charges you heard about the last two times, that like this side of the equation in some sense should be augmented to K-theory. So then the point is that it's very natural, then probably also this side should be augmented to K-theory. So that's what we will do now. And since these were in some sense the Ramon-Ramon field strengths, we will see that Ramon-Ramon field strengths are topologically classified also by K-theory elements. Okay, so that's what we're doing. So if we take the theory type 2b, then we saw that brain charges, that they actually take values in the K group of the manifold. And actually, the equivalent, if we go back to this equation, I think Simeon talked about that we need something like the compactly support. Yeah, you did explain that. So it was really the compactly supported K-theory. So we also, in the same sense, in K-theory, we have a map from the compactly supported bundles into just all bundles. Yeah?
What you usually call compactly supported, I mean, that's in zero brains, right?
Okay, so, yes. So if you want to be an R10, and you want, like, the extended brains, you have to, as you said, only compact support in the transverse direction. We can also just say that the space-time is not R10 but some manifold with cycles and so on. So then you would also get two cycles wrapped on that and so on. But you're right, when you say it like that you only get the particles of the series. Yeah. But just, I think this is also mostly useful if there is some kind of compactified manifold or another manifold than R10. Yeah. In R10 we actually don't learn anything from this whole exercise. The old wisdom was good enough to give all results in R10.
2B.
Also for 2A. Yeah, right. So there are also other string series than the type 2, but which I will not discuss at all. Okay. So deep brain charge, so the new wisdom is now the deep brain charge is the kernel of I. So I is this map. Okay. Okay, so now we want the equivalent of the other side of the equation. So there we derive it in a more or less similar way. We use another, we could say the corresponding long exact sequence for K-theory. And in the same, with same notation M and N, and N is the boundary, and so there is an exact sequence which goes like this. So here's the map I again. This is again from the compact, or N. I'm just writing the same thing in two different ways. But if N is the boundary, then this becomes a compactly supported K-series, and there is this map I into here, right? And we also have this restriction map over here. N is inside M, so we just restrict the bundles from N to N. I think this exact sequence were probably discussed, wasn't it, one of the talks earlier? Yeah. Okay. So we'll just use it. So now we can again write the similar of that equation, that kernel of I, which is a deep brain charge, becomes this thing here, k minus 1 of n, divided out by j, or also let's use Bott periodicity. So it's k1 of n, divided out by j of k minus 1. So here we don't have to distinguish that much between whether it's minus 1 or plus 1. In type 1, 1 would have to be more careful again, where the Bott periodicity is 8. I mean the real buffer, the real bundle. But here we don't care too much. You see, we'll see again and again that the fact that there are only two different K groups for M, like K and K1, is similar to what string series. We know that there are two different type 2 series, type 2B and type 2A. Of course, that was not known. I mean, that's only known recently, that there's that correspondence.
What's the relation of this formulation and the earlier formulation?
So this is the deep. So now deep brain charge was always thought about as the kernel of this I. I mean, basically just differential forms that were
right,
compactly supported. Or,
right.
And now that was improved to K-theory elements.
But how do you relate one to the other?
Oh, you mean if you know... Okay, so the question you should ask is, if we are given then a brain charge here, in the new language of K-theory, how would we describe it? Is that what you're asking?
Well,
I'll describe that later.
The other way around.
The other way around is too imprecise, because this is an improvement of this thing here.
You see,
okay.
Right now you just don't see any logic.
Oh, the logical connections. Okay, right now, the logical connection is just that here
maybe
we have the old description.
Maybe you want to take your form as the chain characters.
Yeah, we want to do that. That's true. I'll get to that a little later. Yeah, I mean, the relation, of course, the way to get from the K-theory elements to these differential forms are through chain characters. But there is not going to be like a one-to-one correspondence. There's something, this is in some sense better. I mean, there is some improvement. It's not just going back and forth by taking chain characters.
But historically speaking, somehow in the beginning we had that formulation, right?
The K-theory?
Yeah, no. The earlier formulation.
Yeah, exactly, the earlier formulation.
Then how do we go from there to here? I mean, there must be some logical thinking.
What do you mean by go from? Do you mean how, when I'm given an element here, how do I define an element here?
No.
Or you want just how string theories thought about all this? Or?
Yeah, I mean, exactly how in the beginning that's the theory. Right.
Okay, but it's
then
like
how
the.
Do you suddenly go here?
Oh, I mean that. Like there are lots of papers in string theory, and I mean, I mean it went through some brain. It went through some
quick reasoning here. Quick
yeah,
reasoning.
The quick reasoning. The
quick reasoning.
Yeah, the quick reasoning was that.
Did you tell them? Yeah, I mean the non-torsion parts always correspond to the term.
The logic was that the gauge feels on brain.
Right.
But somehow, what I don't understand...
So I can try to... You want to know what the logic like for how string theories got all this way.
Part history, just some logical reasoning to go from there to here.
The logic... Well,
maybe you just mentioned that type 2, you have UM, and in type 1, you have SO, and this is why you get K and not K0, and...
Okay. Yeah. So the bundles came in. I think the connection is really because
the Kim-Patton bundle somehow you got three bundles.
Oh yeah. You mean why we jump to K-series? The jump from suddenly going over here and what I did right here, I was just appealing to the last two lectures.
Yeah,
I hope you understood that.
We talked about having these UN gauge fields on the brain.
But the reason I asked again, of course, is I didn't quite understand the whole thing.
Talk about that more, but I actually don't know where you're going more because I don't know this way of thinking about things, but you're in some sense trying to...
I was not planning to say much more about it. I could give a short review of how we got to this K-series. That we had this brain. A long time ago, there were just like zero brains, two brains, and so on. Then it was realized that on a brain, let's say a D2 brain, that's due to the work of Joe, and so we knew that there is a gauge connection on these brains. And then it was realized that using these connections, or using the topological, actually that depending on the topological class of the bundle on the 2 brain, you could create smaller brains inside it. For instance, if you had a D2 brain wrapped on a torus, let's say you wrap a D2 brain on a T2, then you could take a D0 brain and put it in such that you had a D2 and a D0 brain, they make a bound state. So suppose now they are both there and they sit here on the T2. That can be described in terms of the gauge field on the D2 brain as a first turn class, which is 1. Or in other words, if there were n D0 brains, it would be a bundle on T2 with first turn class n. So in this case, you take the bigger brain. In my example here, the bigger brain is a 2 brain. There is a gauge field living on that. Now the topological class of the gauge bundle of that determines what the charges are of the lower brains. So this was, of course, an important realization in string theory one of the most important and leading towards this, that there are gauge fields on brains, and that these gauge fields can create something that looks like smaller brains inside it. Inside a D2 brain, you can create a D0 brain by using the gauge field.
When I look at a formula in a paper by Greg Moore and another,
which formula?
They computed the discharge in terms of the chain character of the chain pattern bundle multiplied by some A root.
I'll get to that.
Then we can wait.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so that's exactly the question. Is there some kind of map between them or so? Yeah.
This A gauge field is not related to GP, right?
The what?
This A gauge field is not related to GP.
No, not the way I say it here. No, it's
how
not.
How does GP then service?
You see, suppose you had this D2 brain. And on that, there is a gauge field living. So suppose, for instance, we have a 10-dimensional space, there's such a plane through, a 2-dimensional plane through, or an auto time, forget about time. So a 9-dimensional space and a 2-dimensional plane through. Then on that plane, there is a gauge field living. So the gauge field only lives here. It's not well-defined out here. But now there are these Ramon-Ramon fields. They are well-defined everywhere. And then through that coupling that I erased now, you remember, you integrate the Ramon-Ramon field over the world volume of it. That equation could actually be improved. There are more couplings. There are couplings between all these CPs and the gauge fields living on here. So in the action, you would couple these two to each other. So that's the way you get the connection, that if these take a special value, if the charges do something or the brains do something, that will then create Ramon-Ramon fields that do something. That's actually also how you get this formula for churn. An A roof genus. Okay, let's Let me get to that in a minute, but I'll probably not explain it as much as you expect, but okay, we'll see. Okay, so now, what we got to here was just accepting that the D-brain charges now were elements in these K-groups. Then we write down this, the equivalent exact sequence, and we find that kernel of I can also be written like this. And this should, of course, be seen exactly like this, as the equivalent of this. And since the element here on the boundary was what we call the Ramon-Ramon field strings, it's natural to think that this is in some sense also the Ramon-Ramon. I should take topological. Remember, this was not really the Ramon-Ramon field string. This was the topological. I mean, we've gone to cohomology, so it's really only like the topological class of the Ramon-Ramon field strings, right? At only at n. I mean, here at n and here at m. So here it should be. So now the natural thing is to say that what we have here or here is the topological class of Ramon-Ramon fields. So we can do it for all of m if we want. I wouldn't say conclusion, but what it's very natural to suggest is then that in general, Ramon-Ramon fields are topologically given by K1. So we got to K1 of M. So what we assume, or what we suggest, is that if you have string theory, in this case type 2B on a manifold, then there are some Ramon-Ramon fields on that manifold. Usually we would just say they were differential forms. So topologically, usually they would be topologically classified by, if they obey the equation of motion, they would be topologically classified by the cohomology groups. But now we say, no, what they are really classified by are the K groups. So, of course, in the simplest cases, these two things agree, and we didn't achieve anything new. But I'll come to some examples later where there are actually some differences. I'm sorry, I might run out.
Actually, I should have asked the question this way. Here, in this formulation, there is no brain. So
right. You mean where there is no brain?
Yeah, where is the brain?
Yeah, okay. So here, so the logic here is that first I describe the old view of D-brain charges, and how it's measured by Ramon-Ramon fields. So now the logic is that we change D-brain charges into K-theory elements.
Yeah.
And then I use this, there should still be this equivalent, there should still be something like this, this way that a D-brain charge can also be sort of as telling us what the Ramon-Ramon fields are doing at infinity. So there must be something equivalent here, and that's then telling us that Ramon-Ramon fields should probably also topologically be classified by K1 in this case, K1. But now we can drop the brains and just take a space with some Ramon-Ramon fields, even if there were no brains, but the fields are still there, and say that when we describe the physics on that manifold, or type 2B on that manifold, one part of the description should be to say what topological class of Ramon-Ramon fields are in, and then we say, okay, they take elements in K1 of M. Not in cohomology groups, but in K groups.
So you are saying that even without D-brain at
yeah.
all, there is some theory which relates our Ramon-Ramon fields to K theory?
More that the Ramon-Ramon fields are, at least topologically, are K elements in that K group. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
If you are at infinity, then you cannot see the D-brain.
No, but listen here. Okay, so the logic was also that there is like in this equation, there's both infinity and the full manifold. I mean, we kind of say, okay, it's like this thing will then correspond to this and this to this. So we actually, first you can say first we prove it at infinity if you want to. But then afterwards you say there is nothing special about far away. Suppose there were no brains, it should be true everywhere. It's a local, in some sense like a local statement. I mean, semi-local statement. What?
The brain are still inside the space-time, although your charge is supported at infinity.
Yes, but but now we just now we are changing to another physical. Okay, we just use one physical situation to motivate some of these formulas. So then we just obviously how you describe Ramon-Ramon fields could not be determined by whether there happens to be a brain or not around.
Well, you know,
so it's like
in the beginning, my interest is more and more field,
yeah.
Or either some kind of differential form.
Right, exactly.
Then how do they lead to K theory?
Okay, but
directly.
It's not, you understand, we don't know the definition of the full series. It's more correct to say we thought that they were just, we thought that they were, yeah, we wanted, yeah. Or actually we would probably like to say we don't want to make definitions, I mean that's too rigid. It's more like we discover that. Suppose in the real world that you always thought the electric field was like a, whatever. Or electric and magnetic field could be described by a two-form. I don't know if you know about that description, but usually like a two-form. But then maybe we discover one day, no, it's really better to, and then some other construction. So it's not mathematics where you start with something and then prove that it is something else. It's more that we discover.
It's really negative, Ramon.
Yeah, yeah. We discover that it's better to think of them in another way. Yeah. Okay. So there is a similar story for type 2A. So maybe, yeah, maybe. A very similar long exact sequence in type 2A. And everything is just reversed. Remember, in type 2A, the brain charges were classified by K1. Did Simeon talk about, did you talk about that?
I didn't get it.
Yeah, you didn't. Okay, but in type 2A, you just reverse. So the brain charges, so the charges are given by elements in K1, compact supported of M, I mean the kernel of this map. And then the similar derivation would give that Ramon-Ramon fields are classified by K of M. So in some sense, type 2A is, so in type 2A it's KM, and in type 2B it's K1 of M. Okay. So now I'll come to.
But if you want to say now Ramon-Ramon fields are K group elements.
Yeah, I think it's more correct to say just the topological class of them. Yeah? Because K-theory only measures the topological class.
They are still differential forms?
But that's, I think that's something that we don't know yet. You would like to say what they really are, something that would, because there is more to Ramon-Ramon fields than just the topological class. I mean, when we do physics, sometimes we integrate over, you write down an action, I mean, there is also.
Why do you want to say Ramon-Ramon fields are chain character? Of a K-group element. Do you want to say that?
No, I don't. Often we do in physics when we have fields. For instance, it depends on what you want to do with them. If you usually in physics, you have a path integral. We write e to the minus the action, right? Something like this. Suppose we calculate things like this. Then, if you want to do this with a Ramon-Ramon field, it would not work. You see, K elements is like a discrete thing. It's just a topological thing. But here we want to integrate over all values. Suppose that what differential forms is like we want to integrate over all values for the differential form. We want the differential form to go through the space of differential forms, also those that don't obey the equation of motion. The equation of motion are just the things that give most contribution to this integral. So we can't just say that Ramon-Ramon fields are just, I mean, at least off-shell, if you want some kind of off-shell, I mean off-shell means that you don't obey the equation of motions, but want something like this, integrate over it. It would be too strict to say that they are, that you just sum over K elements. But the, yeah.
In the Whitney Moore paper, I think they sort of integrate out the non-topological fluctuations of the Ramon-Ramon forms and just get the partition
yeah.
function for the
topological. Yeah. That's true. So if you want to so usually how would you, let me do a connection. So how would you usually do such, let's do a connection instead. This could be Young-Mills theory, F squared or something. Then usually you would calculate such a path integral as a sum over topological sectors of the series, and then inside each topological sector, you would make an integral. Right, for instance, suppose it was Young-Mills theory.
But that's what people still
so then this is like more what you sum over. Here you would get the K group. Right, that's what Simon says, and here you would get
yeah,
this integral would contain the local information of the field.
But still you know what Young-Mills
I agree, and we don't know. Okay, exactly. So we know what Young-Mills fields. We don't have as good an understanding of what Ramon-Ramon fields are as what Young-Mills fields are. We don't even. Nobody says it. It might not be true. String theory might not even be given by such an integral. It might just be in the low energy limit that maybe even the concept of Ramon-Ramon fields only appears in like a low energy limit. I mean, we there's so much we don't know. Yeah, if we had a definition where we could say they are these things, then it would be easier. Yeah.
They sort of generalize the integrated out. They generalize the. They sort of start with the small partition function where you've already integrated out the local fluctuation, and then just generalize the sum over topological classes.
I mean, the K element could not give you more than, it only gives you like a topological classification, not all the local dynamics. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm running. Should I just continue or should we maybe next time? I don't know.
If you have enough to give another talk, then it certainly could be.
Yeah, maybe I could. If I write a little more, I could give another talk. Yeah, maybe you should do that. Yeah, okay.
Now, can I ask one more
question?
In the beginning about that CP, the Ramon forms, you said they are not forms.
I mean, in the same way as a connection is not a one form, right?
But
I mean,
if they are two forms, then certainly they are like a connection on line bundle.
If they are one forms, they are like connections on line bundle.
One bundle, right? However, you do have three and five. So what
good question. If we would like mathematicians to generalize bundles to something, I mean,
there's this gerbs.
Yeah, gerbs. Yeah, I've heard the word many times. I never really studied too much what it is, but maybe they are gerbs or something. Yeah, they are the equivalent thing. Okay, so at the abelian level, at what we would call U1, I mean, not UN, but just U1, you know, the one form, the connection is really well defined up to, I mean, Gates transformations would just do this. Sorry. The one form A goes to A plus D lambda, where lambda is a zero form.
Right.
That's the uncertainty in it.
Right.
So you could do this for any P, and here's P minus one. You don't need this to be a zero form and this to be a one form. At the UN level, it gets much harder. There we know that the connection A would then go into something. If we make a Gates transformation with an element G, in UN, right, it would be something like GA, G inverse, plus DG, G inverse. Maybe I'm writing more or less like this, right? But then, it would be nice to have the generalization of this to like the higher gerbs or what. I mean, I don't know. That's obviously an interesting question. That's in some sense something mathematicians should look for.
But right now, the gerbs are there.
There's some kind of bundle. What?
Line bundles.
Yeah. Oh, and you say they're only defined for like the line part, yeah. Yeah, so then you should really look for the non-abelian generalization of that, yeah. That would be interesting.
Here's another question. Near the brain, the field strength is really strong. Are you worried about not having a flat background?
Say it again, if what?
Near the brain, the field strength, G, is very strong.
Yeah.
Are you worried about not having a flat background?
Flat meaning that the metric will be, the metric is also, when you solve the full equations of motions, the metric will also couple to these things. I'm not worried about it, but it's correct that the background will not be flat. The metric will change. And there are also other fields I didn't mention. They will also change.
Your wisdom of how the string is attached to the D-brain will not be changed or not. Usually we do the string perturbation theory. We argue that D-brain is where the end point of the string is attached. If the metric is singular, then how do we do that?
No, if you have the brain, if you do perturbative string theory where the brain is here and then the string ends here, then you do it for weak string coupling. Then it doesn't become singular. You have the brain sitting in a well-defined space.
But the field strength, G is singular.
The field strength?
Yes.
What field strength? No.
G.
Oh, that the Ramon-Ramon field strength. Yeah. It's okay that it...
And so I imagine the metric will also...
Yeah, at the point. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Okay, but okay. Yeah, okay. That's a good question in some sense. But when you do these calculations, you put the brain in the background that was there before the brain came. I mean, you would say, for instance, the brain sits in flat R10, even though it's correct that after the brain comes in, it's not flat R10. Actually, there is an interest. That has occupied physicists a lot. Like you can go between the two, especially if there are many brains, they will really change the metric a lot. that like you can use either of the two descriptions. But if you want to calculate with a string ending on the deep brain, like these perturbative calculations, you should not do it in the background that the brain creates. Oh, I mean, this is, yeah. No, it's a very good question. Yeah.
Would you not do that in general relativity? Would you consider rational in general relativity?
Yeah, I mean, we do. What do you mean by general relativity? What example are you thinking?
Suppose that electromagnetic couples with gravity, then we do not take first of Maxwell's equation without...
Okay, so the equivalent of... Yeah, if you want to couple... Okay, coupling electromagnetism to gravity is more like here that you couple the Ramon-Ramon fields to the metric. Not the brain, but that you couple all the other fields, like the G. All these are coupled in a way where you solve a full at low energy, which is the equivalent of general relativity. You solve a complicated set of differential equations. That's right, I'm not saying that one, I mean, they all couple at the same time.
Okay, so but suppose we study quantum field theory, suppose we have another very large field which needs to be quantized. Then we actually, in quantum field theory with curved space-time, we actually expand the field in terms of not the flat string wave mode, but the actual...
Yeah. Yeah, you could live in a... But there it's living in a fixed background, yeah. Oh, I mean, you could. There are two different things, right? You could have a before the brain comes. You could have a non-flat background. That's another question that might. I mean, the brain could be sitting on some other space, and then you want to quantize. That would also be more difficult, at least on a general space. It's done in some simple cases. I thought you
are seeing the gravity is again described by the space-time metric.
Yeah, gravity is basically like.
But
then
you can quantize the space-time metric also.
Yes, that's what all of string theory is about, in some sense you can say. Yeah, what we're talking about here, yeah, that's right. But we are the Ramon-Ramon, here I'm only talking about like a small text of string theory. Yeah, the full string theory, the gravity might be the hardest part to understand. And you have to quantize that and so on.
But somehow the total curvature doesn't appear. Maybe that makes life easier.
The curvature could appear. You mean what in the cases I'm talking about now?
No, I mean in order to include the full general relativity theorem.
Yeah. It's all included with curvature and so on.
But we haven't seen the total curvature yet.
Where you mean in my talk you haven't seen it?
Right. No.
Right. Because string theory is a huge, huge subject, and
no,
I haven't gotten through all of it.
Anywhere in string theory, you include the total curvature functional in your function, in your action.
Yes, you do. If you go and read these usual actions for the low energy effective.
But then won't you run into the same problem with quantization, the renormalization?
You do. And that's what string theory is about. String theory is not about taking that action and quantizing it like integral dg. That's not what string theory tries to do. That's exactly what distinguishes string theory from the rest of quantum field theory. We think we don't really have the definition of it, but we know a lot more about it. We have a theory that has the property that at low energy it looks like general relativity. But at high energy it's not just given by naive quantization of the metric.
But you do have that total curvature in your action.
Yes, but at low energy, exactly.
At high
that's
energy, they don't appear.
At high energy we should probably use a different description. For instance, at weak string coupling, but high energy, you can use perturbative string theory. What was probably traditionally sort of a string theory, what string theory was. So you could calculate, if the string coupling was still small, you could calculate scattering of gravitons at very, very high energy, where and loops of them, where this, it would break down just like doing it in the naive way. It would be renormalizable.
What kind of action can become the total curvature at low energy? What is that action?
No, there's no guarantee the string theory is an action. It's probably not given by one action that becomes another action at low energy. Maybe it is. I mean, but that's... Okay, we don't... There's some principle that gives this kind of physics at low energy. Whether that principle is an action is unknown at the moment. That would be a big question to answer.
Yeah, because no, right, that's what makes it so hard. There are examples of other, there are lots of examples of one kind of action at high energy giving a very different action at low energy, where the high energy theory has some good definition, the low energy one maybe doesn't. But we don't know of any high energy theory that gives the curvature action at low energy, and that's why the problem is so hard.
Mm-hmm. I thought the string theory gravity is formulated differently. You don't have to use the total curvature. That
well,
makes life
no,
easier.
No, that's...
I mean, well, it's characteristic of string theory. Like other theories that in some areas, in some approximations, they go over to the older theories. And certainly for gravitational fields, they're at wavelengths long compared to the Planck scale. String theory goes over to the older theory. And I mean, in some sense, we assume this is, if we list the things that are known about string theory, this is sort of taken as an axiom. And you know, we have this other approximate description of string theory in terms of scattering one-dimensional objects. And that other description, again, isn't a complete description, but it has some overlap of just with the other, with the curvature description, and where they overlap, they agree. But also where they overlap, they agree, but at high energy, they don't agree. And this description in terms of one-dimensional objects is the correct one.
But
we don't have an action that gives you that. We don't have a really nice action that gives us that.
But eventually, if you want to include the functions into string theory, then that means space-time can't be fixed at outset.
Right.
That's what it's about. But all this discussion kind of are based on the assumption that you already have space-time.
Yeah, my discussion here, exactly. This is also, in some sense, an effective discussion where you have a space-time. That's true.
All of these lectures are sort of in the context of the classical limit of string theory. And so in the classical limit of string theory, you don't have this question.
I see.
But since charges is usually some of the things that are easiest to understand, and they are topologically protected, so even you could imagine that if you had a manifold, a smooth manifold, and then charges were classified, let's say charges by this K group or something, and then let's say the manifold starts to change, and curvature becomes big and so on, and at some point it's not even a manifold anymore. We don't know what it is. It's probably very likely that the topological classification will still be a good...
From the point of propagation, you even don't have the full space-time yet before...
What?
But from the point of view of general relativity, the space-time evolves from the initial data.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, space-time does not evolve. Space evolves.
Space-time
is the whole of
it. However, before your theory is solved, you don't have the future part of the space-time. But here,
but
for
we are not
example, you take Bongrand dual, you are taking Bongrand dual in the entire space-time.
Yeah, yeah. So here you just view it like everything is started from the beginning. It's not an initial value.
Yeah,
we are not trying to make initial value formulations where you evolve in time. It's just given. Everything is given now. Here's the space-time.
Space-time is given.
We assume space-time is a given. Right. But it should be given in a consistent way, meaning that it obeys the evolution. That's exactly, in some sense, what these equations of motions are about. If this GP was not equal to whatever it should be equal to, it would not... That is the equation. That, I mean, you yeah.
Yeah,